Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about how I got into 3D printing using a Creality CR10 V3, from the initial setup to my most recent project. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, I couldn't help but notice that you've put out some interesting content on the YouTube channel around 3D printing. So I thought maybe we should stop and do an episode about 3D printing because I don't think everyone is aware that you have purchased a 3D printer.
Yeah, I was using yours. The last time we talked about 3D printing was, what, episode 127 or something like
that? Yeah, 127. So we'll leave that in the show notes because we did a lot of work on my 3D printer.
Yeah, brought it over and ran it in the garage for a while.
And I know that encouraged you, I think, finally, to take the plunge on your own 3D printer, which I think is a great investment. Mm-hmm. But that whole process, I know a lot of people ask me all the time about purchasing a 3D printer. So I thought maybe we could walk through the whole 3D printer experience so far.
All right. Well, during the holiday season, you know, because holidays are great for sales, Creality had a sale on the CR10, which is basically your printer. You had the CR10S, I believe, right? I'm not sure what the S means. Maybe it's super or
sport. I don't know.
Something like that. Well, I started looking around at the different Creality options. I was thinking, well, hey, I could get the wide format one. But then I realized, you know, wide format means I need to have more space.
Lots of space.
And I don't necessarily have a lot of extra space to just have a 3D printer that I might use once a week or once a month or something.
You know,
like that.
I get that. How often do you need one? I bought the S because it had the larger 300 by 400. Maybe it's 300 also, millimeter printing surface, which was one of the larger ones, but definitely not large format.
Right.
And I think that when I bought it, the S meant that it had two Z axes for the folks out there. Somebody will tell me if that's not right, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was like an upgrade or something like that. Well, I started looking at the CR10s because, you know, I had some familiarity with the way that they work and I wasn't upset with using yours, for instance.
Right.
So I was looking at the V2 and the V3. And the V2 is basically the CR10 second edition. So it has a few of the common upgrades that people like you do to their 3D printer.
Right.
Already included. And the V3 was basically an evolution of that design.
Yeah. I think the latest version still at this point.
Mm-hmm. It is at the time of this recording. So the only difference between the V2 and the V3 was the extruder. On yours, you have the external extruder with the Bowden tube that goes to the hot end.
Right.
Well, with the V3, they use what they call the Titan extruder, and that's the one that mounts directly to the hot end. So the spool sits at the very top of the printer and then runs down through the filament sensor thing and then goes into the extruder. Basically, instead of a Bowden tube, it has almost a direct access to the hot end.
Yeah, that would be beneficial.
It's supposed to be better for control. But I'm still learning to the point where I was like, I'm not sure if I would know the difference.
Well, and I do point out fairly regularly when I'm teaching people how to use mine that we end up unscrewing the Bowden tube sometimes to get to different pieces, parts, or to feed new filament. So it can be more of a hindrance than it is a strength.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went to 3dprinterbay.com.
Like the Pirate Bay?
Kind of, but not really. And actually what it was is over the holiday, Creality had an awesome sale on the V3 and they had discounts on some of the other ones as well. But I was looking at the V3 being that it was the latest edition. I was like, I might as well buy the latest one. Why not?
Sure.
And it already had some of the upgrades, like the crossbars were included.
Yeah, the Z-axis supports is what that is.
And then it has the dual Z-axis extruders and obviously the Titan extruder piece that goes onto the hot end and whatnot.
Yeah, and I noticed it has a lot more metal pieces than mine, or at least it looks like it does.
Yeah, there was a lot of blue pieces on there, which were the aluminum pieces that hold it all together. Everything else is about the same in terms of the way it was structured and whatnot. But they had, I went to 3dcrealityofficialwebsite.com, something, and that was where the sale was. I'm like, hey, this is a pretty awesome deal, but they were all sold out because it was such an awesome deal.
Nice.
Well, then that's when I started doing some Googling, and I found 3D Printer Bay, which I'm like, that seems kind of sketch.
It's so legit.
But it turns out that this particular website sells every 3D printer that you could possibly buy.
Oh, it's like a 3D printer mart.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, they had the same printer there at the same sale price, but they were allowing me to buy it. They didn't see that it was out of stock. So I went, made my purchase, and then they come back and say, well, you know, these are out of stock, so we can give you your money back. I was like, no. Nice. Or you can wait 3 to 4 weeks. When we get stock, we can send one out to you. I'm like, great.
That's not terrible.
Yeah, I'm like, that's pretty awesome. And it turns out that they are really more of a broker site, so they don't stock any of this stuff. They just put in an order directly with the manufacturer to ship it out. So when it was available, I got an email from somebody in China, which is where Creality's from, saying, hey, it's shipped out. Here's your UPS tracking number. I'm like, oh, great. And they, of course, they always send it like the day that it's supposed to show up. And it, lo and behold, I got the email, and then knock, 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 the 3D printer shows up.
Well, I mean, other than the way, that sounds like a pretty easy buying experience.
My purchase experience was relatively painless. One, because I knew a little bit about the printer I wanted to buy, and I had some hands-on experience to give me a, you know, that gentle nudge saying, well, you should probably go with this one because you have experience with it. But, you know, if you go and check out some of the YouTube channels, everybody has their favorite. And I want to say that it's a lot like, you know, it's like your favorite chair. It's like, it's my favorite because I've sat in it the longest, or I like this area in the restaurant because, you know, the lighting's nice. Well, everybody else sits there too, because the exact same reason,
right?
You know, it's personal preference, and it's, I had experience with it. So that's the one that I went with.
Well, I think we've talked about this before, but I went with it because my buddy, who is very into 3D printing, said, this is your best buy and very upgradable and also pretty easy to use. And I'm like, that sounds like a trifecta. Sold.
Mm-hmm. The Creality designs are, they're the type of printer that you could just buy the parts and assemble, assuming you knew what you were putting together, because it looks like it's all off-the-shelf components. The only thing that is really Creality branded is the control box. And even that is something that you can upgrade. So it's really only the shell for the box that is really unique to that particular design.
Well, I like it. And the fact that you can upgrade even the software. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk about that a little bit more, because the experience with setup for you was a little different than mine. I got, of course, a older generation, and it came with a USB stick that was actually a micro SD adapter. That had the instructions on it. So I didn't get very good instructions and in fact struggled a little bit with putting it together, even though I'd seen it already built.
Well, with mine, when it showed up, it was in a fairly large box. It kind of reminded me of one of the, you know, like a 24-inch monitor sort of thing. You open it up and it's sufficiently packed. I mean, it was, it wasn't going to move. You know, it could fall off a truck and somebody could pick it up and it would still be fine when it showed up, which
that's helpful.
Yeah, that's a nice testament to the way that they packed the everything. And it was already semi-assembled, which was a bit of a surprise for me. So the base, which had the build surface and the motors that moved the build surface around, that was all assembled. The Z-axis, I should say, was assembled as well. Really, all you had to do is just put in a couple of bolts and it was attached. I did get an actual paper manual that I could go through, and it had some pretty detailed, hey, put this in this way, put this in this way. There was a bit of confusion in terms of like making sure you had stuff on the right side, because unlike putting together furniture where they give you the little A, C, B, D, it was more like, hey, this is the part. And then you just kind of have to match the picture. But luckily, most of it was already assembled, which I was pretty thankful for. You know, they break it down just because it ships better that way.
Right.
But if you get some of them that are like fully enclosed with the little plexiglass sides and everything, I think that the assembly of those particular styles would be a little bit more involved.
I get that. So how long would you say it took you to put it together?
45 minutes.
Oh, that's not too bad.
I mean, it took me more time to get everything out of the box, to be honest, than it was to put it together. But then again, I am somewhat blessed with using tools.
Yeah, mechanical savvy, maybe.
Yes. Yeah, once I got it put together, then it was a matter of like, well, I wanted to set it up and do my first test print, because that's kind of what they tell you to do. It's like you get the SD card with a couple of G-code things that you can print, like a little cat and a dog and a, not really a boat, but a pig. That was the other thing that was on there. So I went and went through the process. I had some filament from before when your printer was over here. So I installed that filament and then ran it down the way that they wanted me to, and then fired it up, did the bed leveling. That process was a little different than from your printer, which
that's what you're saying. Yeah,
we can talk about that a little bit later. And this was what surprised me the most, was once I got the bed leveled the way that they wanted me to, I went and did a print and it was almost perfect. I mean, you would expect that something that you just recently set up would need to be tuned, but my first print turned out pretty good. I was really surprised.
Well, I want to dig into that a little bit, but I want to come at it from the software angle.
Okay.
Because I know that some of these, mine at least, came with a Cura. I don't know, it might have been an open, you know, public domain version, not a licensed version, but I immediately upgraded myself. I don't think I've ever used the Cura to Simplify, because that was what I was familiar with from working with my buddy Brad.
Yeah, well, it turns out that Simplify 3D, that's the slicer that I use. Mm-hmm. It's well worth the money, because that's the one that you have to buy. Cura is a little bit more involved in terms of what you can do and the tweaks that you can do and the different options that are available for like smoothing and making sure the layer heights are set correctly and different layers within your slice can be printed differently. It's also free. It's not necessarily open source, but they don't charge you for it, because their thought is that, well, you buy the Cura software, it's designed for our style of 3D printer. So you buy the 3D printer and you get the software for free, but it turns out anyone can download it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, to make the software work for Simplify, the printer support, or at least the profile, needs to be set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are a lot of them out there. So you found a profile, or did you build your own?
I actually borrowed yours.
Ah, oh no.
So I, when Darren's printer was over here, I kept a copy of the profile, partially so that I could understand it a little bit more. But I used that as a basis for setting up the profile with this particular printer. And it turns out everything just worked.
Nice.
So I was really happy with that. There's probably some tweaks I can make with like the extraction based off of the extruder that I have. And the one thing that I did have to change, though, was on your printer, you have, right before you do a print, the way it's set up is it does a purge line.
Yeah, yeah, to clean the print head.
Clean print head and make sure that, you know, the filament's where it needs to be and stuff. And then it starts doing a print.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my build surface, when you do the auto home, the nozzle is off of the build surface.
Oh, okay. So it can't immediately start extruding.
Right. So I had to go in and tweak it so that I moved it over, what was it, like 5 millimeters or whatever, 10 millimeters, so that it was onto the print surface and then does the purge line. So that was the one tweak I needed to make. And then after that, it was a matter of just adjusting the layer height and the speed to just match better with what my printer was set up for. And it turns out that I'm able to print at 0.12 millimeter layer height, which is actually really super fine, to the point where it's really super smooth.
Yeah, that's really good.
But I tried to do that with your printer and it kind of choked on me. So something's different between the two and the way that that part of it is set up.
And it may just be the print head. I'm on my second print head and I believe I'm still using the factory version that was recommended for that model. Yeah. I keep meaning to upgrade to the newer buns, which may or may not work better depending on
From what I've been told, the extruder and the nozzle are really what depend mostly on how your layer heights are.
Yeah. So. And there are a lot of upgrades that are available for all these Creality machines or Creality machines. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Yeah, but Simplify 3D, definitely worth the price. So if you want to go out and pick one up, I would say spend a few bucks to do it. The part that I like about Simplify 3D is that it really does make it somewhat simple. So I can just go and double click on an STL file. It will load it into the software and you can spin it around, place it on the build surface, and you design with your profile how big the build surface is, how fast it needs to go. And then you can just make a bunch of tweaks and say, okay, print. That will create the G-code for you that will go to the 3D printer. Or you can go in and actually create slices of the slice.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful. But that will allow you to tweak what happens at different layers. So if you have like a vase, for instance, that has a wide base on it, you can print the bottom part of it in one way and then the top part of it slightly different. So that way you can make it print faster or change the quality. And that's something that you just have to build into the slice before you go and export it.
I feel like I should point out to folks out there that are thinking that sounds a little intimidating, that one of the other nice reasons you buy Simplify 3D is because they support most major printers and they provide profiles for them. Yeah. So you can just download and import a profile and you're going to be 99, maybe even good enough for most hobbyists out there without having to tweak a thing.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the things that you've learned, because I know you're new to 3D printing. You did a little bit of experimenting with mine, and I remember walking you through some of the basics, but...
Yeah, that was a crash course.
For a first-timer just getting into 3D printing, tell us a little bit about the learning curve there.
I'm going to say the learning curve is a bit steep, although I did have a bit of a jump start. So as I've mentioned on the podcast before, I've been trained as an architect, although I work in software, which is pretty crazy.
Well, you're kind of a software architect. Is that a stretch? Maybe.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch. But yeah, so I grew up around AutoCAD and hand drawing and 3D models. So I'm familiar with how to build a 3D model and also extrude pieces and push them together and basically create a 2D drawing into a 3D space. So I already had that skill set. The part that was confusing to me was, well, how do I take model A and convert it to 3D print? So that was the part that was the big learning curve for me. So I would take a drawing out of AutoCAD, for instance. That's my design software of choice. And then I loaded into Simplify 3D, and that process was pretty simple. However, getting the settings right and how does layer height impact print quality and print speed, that was the trial and error part.
Interesting. And I see you've got a big pile of parts here, actually. And I think that now I'm starting to understand why that is the case.
Yeah. So, well, and if we go back in episode 127, we talked about the project that's closest to you.
Oh, yes. The crazy hard drive enclosure. And we've posted a lot of pictures in, especially if you're on the Facebook, about these projects.
Now, that hard drive enclosure, I basically drew that off of a picture that I saw on eBay and then built the model around... it was a 5 1/4 to 3 1/2 inch hard drive adapter that had a faceplate on it with a little blinking LED light.
Yeah.
You know, that was the basis of what I was building. You know, I just basically measured what I needed to have and then built the model and extruded it to match. And when I printed it, it took 21 hours to print, which now I know that I could at least shave about 7 hours off of that by just changing a couple of really simple things.
Oh, yeah.
And I only printed it twice. Because, well, one, I really didn't need to print it more than that. But I printed it once to find out, well, how does this all fit? And then I printed it again as the final piece. That was really all I needed. The stuff you're seeing here is actually for another, well, and this is radio, by the way. But the stuff you're seeing here is me refining that design for a brand new project. And these were all of the iterations that I needed to go through to make sure that everything was positioned the way that I wanted. Because unlike the previous project where I was just trying to make it fit two things, I needed to fit a drive and some electronics in the middle and then fit it around an enclosure. This one, I'm trying to make it fit inside an existing hard drive cage using the actual hard drive lid. And I'll post some pictures down in the show notes so you can check this out.
Oh, so it has to be compatible not only with the mounting, but with the existing part.
Yeah.
I see it.
And on top of that, be able to hold the electronics inside it. You see a big stack of cast-offs here, and these are I posted this on social media. It's like, behold, my failed prints.
Yeah, but I get it because you didn't actually print more than a few layers there just to get an idea that you were doing it correctly or incorrectly. Mm-hmm. And the spacing of the holes.
Yeah, so the first couple that I did were basically to define the outer limits of what my print was going to be and where the four primary holes needed to be. And that was pretty easy to locate. You just kind of measure and triangulate and whatnot.
Right.
Again, architect stuff. At that point, I needed to center where the lid was going to be, and there were six screw holes that I needed to match up, and I knew what the profile needed to be. I knew roughly where they needed to be located, but I have eight prints here that tell you otherwise.
Well, yeah, fine-tuning it. Mm-hmm. But that is the nice advantage of using a 3D printer for rapid prototyping, mm-hmm. is that, you know, the printing process, aside from the time involved, is relatively cheap. The material's cheap, so you can print a little bit, discard it, print a little bit, discard it until you get it right.
Yeah. Well, on top of this, these are the prints that actually... printed. The one thing that is a bit of a learning curve is knowing how to start your prints. On my Creality V3, it comes with a build surface that looks like a piece of tempered glass with some texture on top of it. Well, sometimes if the bed surface isn't hot enough, the PLA won't stick to it, and you'll get like one line or one extrusion that doesn't stick where it's supposed to. And what that happens is it'll flip over, and then when it comes back across to lay down on top of it again, the print head moves.
Yep, doesn't take much.
That at that point, that is the start of a failed print. So you basically have to stop it. There's nothing wrong with the G code. It's just a matter of, well, it didn't stick.
And that base layer is so critical. The foundation, really. We talk about the foundation in so many computer projects.
Yeah.
That's the foundation, the base layer. And I think, there's a whole separate topic about base layers and how pretty and complex some of them are and trying to get it right.
Yeah, and speaking of, there's my first final print of the project here.
Nice.
I have it in my hand, and it looked good, but it failed. And it failed because of this corner, and I'm pointing in the corner right now where...
Oh, it's rounded. It's lifted.
It lifted, and it does, I think they call that curling. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, I want to say that there was an environmental change. And, I have this printer in my office, and if I close the door, it stays relatively warm in there. Well, if I open up the door, there's a blast of cold air that comes through. 10 hours in of this print, it had already gotten past this corner. It was printing these wall pieces, this extruded part. And that's when the curl happened. I'm like, oh, well, this was almost done.
Oh, no.
And it looked great up until that point. So I was like, well, that's failed. And it turned out I needed to print it again. It's just I wanted to see how long it would take to print and what the quality would be like. And as you can see, it turned out really nice, aside from that one corner.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting to me, because that is justification for some of these enclosures to build them to control the temperature. And I've thought about that, but I just haven't gotten to that point where I felt like I needed it.
Well, and they claim that PLA doesn't require like a heated bed. It doesn't require a conditioned space. But I'm going to tell you that, yeah, it does, but it also doesn't. So as I've been learning and printing over the past couple of months, this is a fast learning curve for me. I've learned the nuances of my particular printer. Now, I don't think I could take that same knowledge and go to a different brand and expect it to work one-to-one. There's a bit of a learning curve there, but I know that I could probably take the G code and give it to somebody and they could print it and it might turn out okay.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because this is not the only project that you've been up to. I know you posted another project also for the soldering iron system.
Yeah, my soldering station.
That's right.
Yeah, that was one of the first projects that I undertook when I got the new printer. So obviously the previous hard drive enclosure I did with your printer. And then when I got this new one, I just went out to Thingiverse and was just downloading a couple of models that I thought were fun. And did test prints. At that point you get the STL file, so you can load it into Simplify 3D and then play with different settings to see what happened. Well, I downloaded a soldering station design thinking, hey, well, this would be cool. I can put all of my solder stuff together. It kind of had the right formula. And I printed it, and it turned out that the spot where the tips would be placed, the depth of the hole was too much. So basically the entire tip fell all the way to the bottom and you couldn't grab it out of there.
Oh, that's not going to work.
The station was designed for one of the wider solder spools, one of the really big spools of solder, which I'm not going to spend that much for solder. Mine are a bit thinner. So there wasn't enough room to put two of them in there. And so I'm like, well, hey, I'm going to what they call remix this model. I ended up redrawing it completely, but I went and basically kind of took some of the dimensions, sampled it, so to speak, and then put it into AutoCAD, extruded it the way I wanted, and then fixed the things that I felt were inadequate. So I added a little bit of material to the bottom so the solder tips wouldn't fall all the way through. And I put, instead of solder tips on both sides of the spool, I put in a little tray, so to speak, thinking, hey, well, this could be like for miscellaneous knickknacks, but I ended up putting some of the brass wool used to clean solder tips. I put that on that one side, and it fit perfectly.
Nice.
And turns out I posted it on social media, And I immediately got people asking me, hey, you should post this on Thingiverse. This is awesome. I'm like, okay. So I thought, well, all right, I'm going to go do that. So I started up an account, posted the one design that I had, and then shared the link out. Within a week, there was over 200 likes.
Oh, nice.
On that one model. And I'm like, I don't see why people like this. But then it turns out that everything I changed on that one design that I posted, you know, from the one I remixed it from, everything I changed was exactly what everybody else wanted to do. They just didn't get around to doing it.
Sure.
So I'm like, hey, I did something good.
Very good. So I don't know, maybe we should talk a little bit about what Thingiverse is, because I think from a 3D printing standpoint, it's a huge resource.
Yeah, it is. It and there's, as you mentioned, there's a bunch of like STL finders where you can look for models. You type in keywords and say, hey, 3D printing basket.
Sure. Right?
You know, and you'll get back a bunch of people drawing baskets that you can 3D print. Thingiverse is kind of the, what I would call the social media repository of 3D prints.
That's a good description of it.
What I found out was that it's kind of, it's sponsored by MakerBot or started by MakerBot or something like that.
Initially,
so,
yeah.
So you post your model out there, you can give it some details and, you know, what you printed on or what you printed it with the first time. There's an option in there where you can tip the designer. So if you put your PayPal information in there, people can give you money saying, hey, yeah, you did a really good job. Here's $5 or whatever,
woohoo,
which I thought was kind of cool. And then people can go and, you know, like your designs, and that pushes it up in their algorithm to make it appear higher up on the browse list. So when you come in there, the first page is all of the really popular styles for that month or that last 2 months or something like that. And then if you continue on and browse, then you'll see the ones that are a bit less popular. And so the public decides how popular these designs are or what popular is that week.
Yeah. And I know you can, if you're a member, you can create your own collections and save favorites and track different things also. Cause I do have a list of things that I mean to get around to printing, and some of them are really scary multi-day prints, like, you know, Boba Fett helmets and things like that, that I maybe will never print, but
it's kind of fun to see the model at least. Well, and the other part that I like about it is that there is a bit of community around it. So you can have people follow you. There's an option there where if somebody prints your design, they can post a picture of that print. So it's the, I guess they call it the makes or something like that. So you can see how many people have actually built your design and the remix. So if somebody tags you as a remix, so if they take your design and change it slightly, they'll give you credit saying, well, this is where I got the inspiration from. So it's a big community like that. And it's really fun.
Very nice. Well, when we talked about my 3D printer, I know we talked quite a bit about the upgrades, and particularly with the Creality machines, you can print your own upgrades for the machine. Mm-hmm. Yours obviously is a few generations newer than mine, so a lot of the popular upgrades that we used to build ourselves are now in the new design, lucky you. Mm-hmm. But do you have any upgrades that you're planning on, or things that you've seen that you'd like to improve in the design, or would maybe encourage people to get a different printer because of?
I want to make it quieter.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Always.
So the one complaint that a lot of people have with the Creality designs is that they're noisy.
Oh, they are. Well, we're talking about the control box, not necessarily the actual printing functionality.
Yeah, because, for instance, my extruder has a blower motor, mm-hmm. where yours just has an axial fan.
Right.
Mine has a blower motor to go and cool the print. And it also has an axial fan that cools the extruder or mm-hmm. maintains the temperature of the extruder. Now, the control box on the CR10s, this is an external box. On the Enders, it's an attached box.
Yeah, and I benefits of both, right? But I like the external box because it makes it maintenance friendly.
Yeah, you can you just unplug the stuff and you can move it around. It doesn't get in the way when it doesn't need to be in the way.
Oh, yeah. And if something breaks, it's easy to fix.
Right. Now, with the control box that I found, because I took it apart, there are a total of 3 fans inside there. And each one of those fans turns on at different times. So when you turn the machine on, the fan that you hear is basically the blower fan or the axial fan that cools the entire control box. And that one's on all the time. And it's a really small fan and it runs really fast. It's also an odd size, which is will lead into my discussion right. a little later. When you start printing, there's another fan that turns on that helps cool the power supply, which is built in there. It's a 24 volt industrial style power supply. And then when the power supply feels a load, then the internal fan there will turn on to keep the power supply cool. So when you get a print that's going, all three fans are going basically full tilt, and they're small and loud and spin fast.
Yeah, and over time they can get a little noisy or squealy too, because they're not the most expensive fans, sadly.
No, they're not. And it reminds us of, you know, putting together our first PC back in the day, right? We had those 60 millimeter screamers that were on our heat sinks because we didn't have 120 millimeter fans back in the day. Well, it's the same sort of thing. With these control boxes, that space is limited, even though most of it is open air inside. But they have, what is it, a 50 millimeter fan and a 60 millimeter fan. And then the one on the power supply is a 60 millimeter, but is really super thin. So it makes it difficult to buy replacement fans for it. One of the popular upgrades on the hot end is to put a Tua fan.
Oh, yeah.
Because those actually fit. Those are the same size.
Yeah, and we actually we have a couple of those sitting on my desk that we need to upgrade mine with.
Yeah, we've had those for like 3 years now, and I'm sure Noctua is like, hey, come on, you're supposed to do this. Well, I did buy a couple of Noctua fans with the intent of upgrading my control box to make it quieter. Well, it turns out the fans that come in the box don't match any of the Noctua sizes.
Oh, no.
So I'll have to modify
version three.
Yeah, I'll have to modify the control box to fit those fans if I choose to use them. It's, you know, break out the Dremel. It's not something I haven't done before.
Sure, or maybe 3D print a new case. Who knows?
Oh, no, I don't think I want to do that. But, I mean, that is an option. And, of course, on Thingiverse, there are modifications to the CR10 that people have done where they go and remove the bottom piece and put a big 120 millimeter fan in there and print the whole shroud. I'm like, that, you know, go get them. That's mm-hmm. pretty awesome, but it's not the type of modification I want to make. So, you know, for me, I'm probably just going to take the case martyr approach, and I'm going to remove the noisy fans and put in larger ones as large as I can, and just put a little grill on the outside and make it look somewhat factory and just be quiet in the process. I might also reach out to Silverstone and see if I can get a new 24 volt power supply, because these are industrial ones that you can just buy off the shelf and just replace it, and that way get a much quieter fan.
I don't know. There's an idea. I'd be interested to see if you do that, because I might do that also.
I think it's a relatively easy upgrade, assuming that the power supplies are compatible.
That's the CR10 V3 experience, I think, in a nutshell. Would you do it again? Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it. This particular printer, I've enjoyed every minute of it. It has not given me any fits aside from, you know, some printing nuances, but I blame that on the fact that it's, you know, 40 degrees in Idaho. And it's also relatively dry here, and being that it's a glass build plate with plastic, you get static charges, and that actually can mess up your prints. So it's the fact that it's just winter time.
Well, speaking from experience, I know there's a learning curve to everything about 3D printing, but I think it's worth it. And I think the projects that you've been doing show that really, even with just a little bit of practice or the desire to keep improving, you can make a 3D printer useful for just about any project.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2022. Thanks for listening.